Part 1. Preparations and the Magic Circle. These metaphysics of magicians and necromantic books are heavenly. Lines, circles, scenes, letters, and characters. Aye, these are those that Faustus most desires. Oh, what a world of profit and delight, of power, of honor, of omnipotence is promised to the studious artisan. All things that move between the quiet poles shall be at my command. Emperors and kings are but obeyed in their several provinces, nor can they raise the wind nor rend the clouds. But his dominion that exceeds in this stretcheth as far as doth the mind of man. A sound magician is a mighty god. Here, Faustus, try thy brains to gain a deity. Marlowe's Faust. The first essential is that the magician must be magically consecrated, which means that he must set himself apart from the everyday world and his ordinary life. A magical operation of any difficulty cannot be performed in a normal condition of mind or body. One of the Greco-Egyptian texts tells the magician to remain pure for 7 days. Then, on the 3rd day of the new moon, he must go to the bank of a river, the Nile in this particular case, where he builds a fire of olive wood on an altar made of 2 upright bricks. Before sunrise, he ceremoniously circles this altar. As soon as the rising sun clears the horizon, the magician cuts off the head of a virgin white cock. Throwing the head into the river, he drains the cock's blood into his right hand and laps it up. He burns the carcass on the fire and himself dives into the river. He then climbs back onto the bank, being careful to step backwards, takes off his wet clothes, and puts on new ones. Finally, he must go away without looking over his shoulder. In this process, the magician is purified and set apart from his ordinary self by the week of chastity, the virginity of the cock which he has imbibed with its blood, the plunge into the river, and the new clothes which symbolize his new self. He must climb out of the river backwards and go away without looking behind him to avoid making any link between his new and old selves. All the grimoires insist on the virtues of continence, fasting, and cleanliness. The Grand Grimoire, for instance, says that the magician must abstain from the company of women for an entire quarter of the moon, and may eat not more than 2 meals a day during that period. Each meal is preceded by a prayer in which the magician devotes to God his soul, his heart, his inward parts, his hands, his feet, his desires, his entire being. Eliphas Levi recommended a thorough wash before beginning a magical operation, and that the atmosphere of the place where the ceremony is to be held be purified by burning a mixture of the juice of laurel leaves, camphor, salt, white resin, and sulfur. Laurel juice is an intoxicant. Camphor is traditionally supposed to have the power of preserving chastity. Salt is white for purity and is a protection against evil forces. When the spirit is evoked and has breathed in the fumes from this mixture, it has eaten the magician's salt, in effect, and is restrained from harming him. Levy also said that the operator should have the minimum of sleep before the ceremony and should abstain altogether from intoxicating drink and the eating of meat. There is a mixture of motives behind this insistence on purity and fasting. Although he may intend to kill, torture, or indulge his lust, the magician purifies himself because he will call on God for assistance, and he will use divine names of power to control the spirit he evokes. This spirit is a powerful occult force and a dangerous one. An abstinence is a method of avoiding contamination through the entry into the body of impurities which the spirit might be able to seize on. Many primitive peoples fast and swallow emetics or purges before taking part in sacred ceremonies. And in classical times, people who went to gather particularly powerful herbs were warned to fast and to be chaste, to wear white clothes or go naked, and sometimes to chew garlic, the smell of which would dismay the demonic forces they were likely to disturb. Much the most important reason for abstinence, however, is that it heightens the magician's powers. The refusal to concern himself with food or drink or women allows him to devote himself utterly to the ceremony which he is to perform. Chastity banks up his sexual energy, fasting and going without sleep weaken the body and give strange powers to the mind. Some modern magicians recommend the opposite of the traditional procedure. Drink, drugs, and sex can be used to produce a state of mingled exhaustion and exaltation in which the magician's powers are raised to their highest pitch. But it is essential that the magician does not indulge himself for pleasure, which would distract him from the necessary iron concentration on the business in hand, but with the clear and sole purpose of building up his magical energies. The force to be evoked may show itself by taking temporary possession of the magician or one of his assistants, and one of those present should be weakened to the point of exhaustion by drink, drugs, wounds, and the ceremony itself, so that he can put up the least possible resistance to the invading force. The ceremony should be held in a secluded place where no one is likely to interrupt. If the place has an atmosphere of mystery, romance, or evil, so much the better. The ceremony can be performed in the ruins of a castle, a church, or a monastery, in a graveyard, in a wood or a desert, or at a place where three roads meet, sacred to Hecate, the goddess of sorcery. The operations can also perfectly well be performed in a private house, in which case the room should be hung and carpeted in black, and all doors and windows should be locked. The grimoires say that the operator needs numerous instruments and accessories. The details of their manufacture are usually so absurdly complicated as to be almost impossible of performance. The vital requirement is that everything used must be virgin. The magician must either make his instruments or magical weapons himself from previously unused materials, and this is preferable, or he must buy them brand new and especially for his operations. The virtue of a thing which is virgin is that its innate force has not been dissipated by use, but beyond this, to use any object which is second-hand or has been employed for non-magical purposes is to risk terrible dangers. The previous owner or the previous use may have linked the object with influences which are not in harmony with the ceremony the magician intends to conduct. Powerful forces are brought into play in magical operations, and if something goes wrong, the power shorts, and the magician or his assistants may, at the very least, be knocked down or struck unconscious by it. This is an unpleasant and dangerous experience, though the person usually recovers. On the other hand, the experience does have a certain backhanded advantage, as Crowley pointed out. Quote, "But it does encourage one. It is useless to deny it. To be knocked down by a demon of whose existence one was not really quite sure." Unquote. Another reason for demanding that the magician make his own paraphernalia is that in doing so he fully involves himself and all his capabilities in the work. Magic is not for the incompetent, the faint-hearted, or those who lack application and determination. The magician will need a sword and a sharp knife or dagger. These should be forged or bought on the day and in the hour of Jupiter, planet of success and prosperity, at a time when the moon is waxing. An incantation must be said over them to infuse them with power. For example, from the Grimorium Verum, "I conjure thee, form of the instrument, by God the Father Almighty, by the virtue of heaven and by all the stars which rule, by the virtue of the four elements, by that of all stones, all plants, and all animals whatsoever, by the virtue of hailstorms and winds, to receive such virtue herein, that we may obtain by thee the perfect issue of all our desires, which also we seek to perform without evil, without deception, by God, the Creator of the sun and the angels. Amen." A magic wand or rod is another important weapon, and one of the supreme emblems of magical power, partly because it is a phallic symbol. The use of ceremonial staffs or wands is very ancient, and they have been found near prehistoric hearths. Moses and Aaron used their magic rods to smite the land of Egypt with plagues. The wand also belonged to Hermes, who led the souls of the dead down to the underworld, and it became an emblem of all who rule over the dead. In the Odyssey, Circe changes the comrades of Odysseus into swine with her rhabdos, or wand. The Rabdus was eventually personified as a demon. Rabdus, the strangler, is one of the devils listed in the Testament of Solomon, which says that he was formerly a wise man of great learning, Hermes. The wand must be made of hazel. A hazel rod is also used in water divining. According to the Grand Grimoire, the rod should be 19½ inches long, cut at sunrise so that it captures the vigorous energy of the newly reborn sun. It must be cut with the magic knife, which should be stained with blood again to capture energy. The magician must pray to Adonai, Elohim, Ariel, and Jehovah to endow the wand with the power of the rods of Jacob, Moses, and Joshua, the strength of Samson, the righteous wrath of Emmanuel, and the thunders of mighty Zeriat Natmik, who will avenge the crimes of men at the day of judgment. The name Ariel means hearth of God, and in the Old Testament is applied to Jerusalem. Woe to Ariel, to Ariel, the city where David dwelt. It later became the name of a spirit, Ariel, whose best-known appearance is in the Tempest. Pointed steel caps are fixed onto the two ends of the hazel rod and magnetized with a lodestone. The magician then commands the rod by the names of Adonai, Elohim, Ariel, and Jehovah to obey his will, to attract all substances he wishes to attract, and to sunder and reduce to chaos all things he wishes to destroy. Until they are needed, the sword, knife, and wand should be wrapped in an expensive silken cloth of any color except black or brown. Before they are used, they should be purified and consecrated by sprinkling them with water, preferably holy water, and fumigating them, exposing them to perfumes. The sprinkling should be done with a bunch of mint, marjoram, and rosemary tied with a thread, or, alternatively, with a bunch of vervain, periwinkle, sage, mint, valerian, ash, basil, and rosemary. The perfume used is either ecclesiastical incense or is made by burning aloes wood, mace, storax, and benzoin. Benzoin is a resin which is one of the principal ingredients of both church incense and friar's balsam. The magician's robes are another important factor. The magical elements, attributed to Peter of Abano, but probably not written by him, recommends robes which have been used by a priest in his services because of the sacred force inherent in them. This is a rare example of an exception to the virgin rule. The fourth book, added to Agrippa's occult philosophy, suggests a robe of white linen, fitting closely and covering the whole body down to the feet, tied with a girdle. All undergarments should be made of linen or silk and should be white for purity. Shoes must also be white, and the magician ought to wear a white hat or crown with names of power written on it, for example, YHVH in front, Adonai at the back, El on the right side, Elohim on the left, according to the Key of Solomon. Names of power and powerful designs or symbols can also be drawn or embroidered on the robe. Although the grimoires recommend white robes, in operations of an unquestionably evil nature, or which clearly involve the powers of darkness, trappings of black and red would be closer to the nature of the work and more effective. Buttons, buckles, hooks, and knots should be avoided as far as possible because fastenings may impede the flow of power from the magician. Gerald Gardner, a member of a modern witch coven, says that witches work naked so as not to impede the release of magical force which their ceremonies generate in their bodies. When the magician washes himself, his actions represent the cleansing of his mind from all irrelevant thoughts. Conversely, donning the robe is a symbol of his assumption of a suitable frame of mind. He first repeats a short banishing formula from Psalm 51, "Purge me with hyssop, and I shall be clean. Wash me, and I shall be whiter than snow." Then comes the consecrating formula, which dedicates him to his task. In the Lamegaton it is, quote, "By the mysterious power of this garment, I put on the armor of salvation in the strength of the Most High, Ancor, Amicar, Amidis, Theodonias, Anitor, that my purpose be achieved. O Adonai, through thy power, to whom be honor and glory for evermore. Unquote. Once the magician is robed, he can proceed to an extremely important preliminary, the drawing of the magic circle. The circle must be drawn properly, and when the spirit has been summoned, the magician leaves the circle at his peril. McGregor Mathers says that without a correctly constructed circle, quote, the invocation to visible appearance of such fearful potencies as Amaemon, Egin, and Beelzebub would probably result in the death of the exorcist on the spot, such death presenting the symptoms of one arising from epilepsy, apoplexy, or strangulation, unquote. Mathers was present at an operation in which the magician accidentally leaned forward slightly over the edge of the circle and received a shock which struck the magic sword from his hand and hurled him staggering back into the circle. The circle has been considered powerful in magic from time immemorial, though it is not known why. Perhaps it is a perfect figure because every point on the circumference is equidistant from the center. But whatever the reason, the use of a circle to mark the boundary of a sacred or protected area is very old, as at Avebury in Stonehenge. The Babylonians drew a circle of flour round the bed of a sick person to protect him from demons. And similarly, it was customary among German Jews in the Middle Ages to draw a circle round the bed of a woman who had just given birth to a child. An envoy of Rome, delivering a message to a foreign and hostile ruler, would draw a circle round himself with his staff, apparently as a sign of his inviolability. According to the 9th book of the Enquiry into Plants, by the pioneer botanist Theophrastus, a pupil of Aristotle, it is best to draw a circle round certain dangerously powerful plants before digging them up. In gathering black hellebore, whose root has strong purgative properties, you should draw a circle round it and cut it facing east and saying prayers to the gods. 3 circles should be drawn round that most deadly of plants, the mandrake. To dig up the noisome gladwin, Iris fetidissima, draw a circle round it 3 times, cut it with a 2-edged sword, and leave wheat cakes in its place in payment for it. In all these cases, it seems that the circle is drawn to keep at bay the earth spirits which may hurry to the spot when a plant belonging to them is gathered. Magic circles do not appear frequently in the Greco-Egyptian texts, but in medieval and modern magic, the circle is of paramount importance. It should be 9 feet in diameter, drawn with the point of the magic sword or knife, or with chalk or charcoal. It can also be drawn with vermilion paint, which has power partly because of its color, and partly because it is usually made of mercury and sulfur, the components of the stone. A second circle, 8 feet in diameter, is drawn inside the first, so that the completed circle looks like a round plate with a narrow rim. Names of power are written in this rim as a barrier against the forces to be evoked. Crosses, bowls of water, and such plants as vervain, anise, and St. John's wort, which devils are said to dislike, should be placed in the rim. Water, holy water if possible, should be sprinkled round the outside of the circle. The magic circle used by modern witches is slightly different. It is 9 feet in diameter, with 2 outer circles, each 6 inches further out. There must be no gap or break in the circle through which evil forces might get into it. Care must be taken not to scuff or blur its lines. A gap is left for the magician and his assistants to enter the circle, and once they are in their places, the gap is closed. Sometimes the assistants are placed outside the main circle in smaller circles of their own. Diagram 12 shows a simple circle from a French manuscript using the names of power Alpha, Omega, and Agla, signs of the cross, and the words Dominus adjutor meus, the Lord my helper. The Grimoire of Honorius uses the same type of circle with, written in the rim, cross, et verbum caro factum est, cross, Jesus autem, cross, transiens per medium illorum ibat. And the word was made flesh, but Jesus, passing through the midst of them, went his way. the force of which will keep the magician unscathed in the midst of the powers he has summoned up. An 18th century version of the Key of Solomon recommends a more complicated arrangement. 3 concentric circles within a square, with the names of power Adonai, El, Yah, Eloah, Eye, and Tetragrammaton. The Lemegaton says that the triangle of Solomon should be drawn outside the circle and 2 feet away from it. The spirit is conjured into this triangle, from which it will not easily escape. The name inside the triangle is Michael. The origin of Anaxhexaton, or Anaphexaton, said to be, quote, the name which Aaron spoke and became wise, unquote, is obscure, but it may be connected with the Greek words anaphero and ekphero, to bring forth or put forth. Numbers 17:8 describes how the rod of Aaron brought forth exenenke, buds, and bloomed exenthesen, blossoms. In this way, God designated Aaron and the tribe of Levi as the priesthood of Israel. In some of the later textbooks, a much more ominous note enters into the instructions for making the circle. According to the Grand Grimoire, it should be made of the skin of a young goat, cut into strips, and fastened down with 4 nails taken from the coffin of a dead child. Inside the circle, a triangle is drawn, in which the magician and his assistants stand. 2 wax candles are placed in the circle, one to the left of the triangle and the other to the right, each set in a circlet of vervain. Along the base of the triangle is written IHS, standing for Jesus, and in hoc signo vinces, in this sign conquer. A brazier of burning charcoal is placed in front of the magician, and the fire is fed with camphor and brandy. A German grimoire called Dr. Faust's Großer und gewaltiger Meergeist, Dr. Faust's Great and Powerful Sea Spirit, supposedly published in 1692, and claiming to be a translation of a Latin original by the famous Faustus himself, says the circle should be made of lead, the metal of death, with the names of power hammered into it. Inside it is a triangle made with 3 chains from a gibbet and nails which have been driven through the head of a man broken on the wheel. The chains and nails must be hammered and welded together with copper on Good Friday night between 11 and midnight. And at each stroke of the hammer, the magician must say, Peter, bind it. Each of the magician's assistants carries a dagger in his left hand, and in his right, a wax candle which has burned by the bier of a corpse and has afterwards been blessed by a priest. The magician himself wears a blue robe, and for his girdle, a cloth which has been used by an executioner to wipe his sword after beheading a criminal. Eliphaz Levi, who sometimes let his imagination run away with him altogether, said that when the circle was to be used for evoking evil forces, it should be drawn with the point of the magic sword, with the inner circle made of strips of lamb's or kid's skin, nailed down with 4 nails from the coffin of an executed criminal. Inside this is a triangle, with candles made of human fat to left and right, set in black wooden candlesticks and encircled with vervain. Along the outer edge of the circle, 4 objects are placed. The head of a black cat which has fed on human flesh for 5 days, a bat which has been drowned in blood, the horns of a goat which has had intercourse with a girl, and the skull of a parricide. The magician wears a seamless black robe without sleeves and a cap of lead engraved with the symbols of Venus, Saturn, and the moon. These grisly properties, which might not always be very easy to obtain, are recommended by the authors of the textbooks mainly to send a delightful chill down the reader's spine. But they also illustrate the fact that the circle is not intended only to keep at bay the evil forces outside it, but also to concentrate the forces inside it. The grim accessories create the right atmosphere for the ceremonies which follow, and they contribute a force of their own, the force inherent in things connected with death, agony, violence, and perversion. The 4 nails are a protection against demons because they are made of iron, but their link with a man who has been executed gives them the powerful energy of the resentment and hatred which he felt at the moment of death. If the man was tortured to death, the force of his agony and rage is believed to be even stronger. The candles of human fat contain life energy, and so does the cloth stained with blood. The head of the cat fed on human meat, the drowned bat, the goat's horns, and parasite's skull are conductors of the fierce, intoxicating currents of energy aroused in the performance or contemplation of acts which are perverted, cruel, and abominable. The circle is a focus for these forces, and also for the energy which the magician brings to the work from the depths of his own being. The Grimoire of Honorius provides an interesting incantation for the magician to chant while drawing the circle. The words are muddled and confusing, but a modern Kabbalist would probably interpret the incantation as a method of summoning up the divine power from within the magician to concentrate it in the circle. O Lord, we fly to thy power. O Lord, confirm this work. That which is working in us becomes like dust driven before the wind, and the angel of the Lord coming, let the darkness disappear, and the angel of the Lord ever pursuing, Alpha, Omega, Eli, Elohe, Elohim, Zabahot, Elion, Sadi. Behold the lion who is the victor of the tribe of Judah, the root of David. I will open the book and the seven seals thereof. I beheld Satan as a bolt falling from heaven. It is thou who hast given us power to crush dragons, scorpions, and all thine enemies beneath thy feet. Nothing shall harm us. By Eloi, Elohim, Elohe, Zabahot, Elion, Esarche, Adonai, Jah, Tetragrammaton, Sadi. The confusion of I and thy here suggests that the angel of the Lord may be the divine energy which bursts forth from the magician, dissipating the darkness and driving the dust of his normal self before it like the wind. He identifies the angel and himself with the Lion of Judah, the Lamb of Revelation, which opened the book with seven seals, and with Christ who beheld Satan falling from heaven. Then he delivers a triumphant paean in praise of his own divine power. He is the innocent of hands and clean of heart, and he is also the King of Glory. The earth is the Lord's and all those who dwell therein, because he fixed it upon the seas and made it in the midst of the waves. Who shall go up into the mountains of the Lord? Who shall be received in his holy place? The innocent of hands and clean of heart, who hath not received his soul in vain and hath not sworn false witness. The same shall be blessed of God and shall obtain salvation. He is of those who seek him. Open your gates, ye princes. Open the eternal gates, and the King of Glory shall come in. Who is the King of Glory? The Lord Almighty, the Lord mighty in battle. Open your gates, ye princes. Lift up the eternal gates. Who is the King of Glory? The Lord Almighty, he is the King of Glory. Glory be to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Ghost. Amen. A modern formula for drawing the magic circle is given by the English Kabbalist who wrote under the name of Dian Fortune. The magician faces east and makes the sign of a cross on his forehead and chest. This is not the Christian cross, but the equal-armed cross, which stands for the four elements and the four cardinal points. Touching his brow, the magician says, To thee, O God, touching his solar plexus, be the kingdom, touching his right shoulder, and the power, touching his left shoulder, and the glory, clasping his hands, unto the ages of the ages. Amen. The magician is proclaiming his mastery of the universe, the elements or cardinal points, and God is himself. He next imagines that he has a great cross-handled sword in his right hand. Holding it point upwards, he says, In the name of God I take in hand the sword of power for defense against evil and aggression. He imagines himself towering up to twice his normal height, a tremendous armed and mailed figure vibrating with the force of the power of God. He draws the circle on the floor with the sword, imagining a line of golden flame following the sword's point. Then, facing east, he clasps his hands and raises them above his head, saying, May the mighty Archangel Raphael protect me from all evil approaching from the east. He repeats this formula, facing south, west, and north in turn, but substituting the names Michael, Gabriel, and Uriel, respectively. In this case, the circle has been drawn deshel, clockwise, from east to south to west to north, following the direction of the sun. In operations which are consciously evil or dedicated to the devil, the magician should move the opposite way, widdershins, from Anglo-Saxon wither, sith, to walk against, which is moving against the sun and is therefore an unnatural and perverse motion attractive to evil forces. The seven terrible maskim of Babylonian theory, the devilish counterparts of the planetary gods, moved against the sun. They rose in the west and went down in the east. Witches danced widdershins at the Sabbath. Before the ceremony itself begins, all irrelevant or disturbing forces must be banished from the circle. Pentagrams and hexagrams are used for this, and also act as additional defenses during the ceremony. The origin of the belief that the pentagram is a barrier against evil is unknown. The stock medieval explanation of its power is that the five points of the star stand for the five wounds inflicted on the body of Christ, and for this reason devils are terrified of it. In modern theory, the pentagram represents God or man, one, added to the physical universe, four, solidity, the elements, and is a symbol of the divine power which man has over the universe. It is also an emblem of man, because a man with his arms and legs stretched out is a living pentagram, the points of the star being his head, hands, and feet. Pentagrams should be drawn in the rim of the circle and outside it. The pentagram of Solomon, from the Lamegaton, diagram 14, should be embroidered on the magician's robe, or drawn on parchment or other material, and carried in his hand. The pentagram with one point upwards repels evil, but a reversed pentagram with two points upwards is a symbol of the devil and attracts sinister forces because it is upside down and because it stands for the number two. It represents the great goat of the witch's Sabbath, and the two upward points are the goat's horns. The hexagram, or seal of Solomon, is another powerful symbol which may be drawn inside or outside the circle. Solomon is said to have owned a seal ring on which the real name of God was engraved and which enabled him to master all spirits and demons. Arab writers said that this seal was in the shape of a six-pointed star, and so this symbol is used in magic to control spirits. In modern theory, the hexagram stands for the combination of both above and below, represented by its two triangles, one pointing up and the other down. It is an emblem of man as God. It is also a symbol of the philosopher's stone because it unites the symbols of fire and water. The double seal of Solomon, as shown in the Lamegaton, diagram 15, combines a circle, a hexagram, and names of power. It should be drawn or embroidered on the magician's robe. A small brazier should be placed inside the circle. A charcoal fire is lighted in it, and various substances are burned. The fumes attract spirits, and the spirits can make visible forms for themselves out of the smoke. This notion may be connected with the fact that when charcoal is burned, part of the smoke condenses as soot, which was regarded as the manifestation of a spirit. For instance, Petrus Bonus says of soot in his New Pearl of Great Price, quote, "Here a spirit, as it were, has evaporated from the fire and has assumed a corporeal form," unquote. It is significant that many of the substances recommended for burning in operations of sorcery give off fumes likely to cause stupor, hallucinations, or delirium. Hemlock, henbane, black hellebore, Indian hemp, opium, all of which are powerful narcotics. One formula for summoning devils requires the burning of coriander, hemlock, parsley, liquor of black poppy, fennel, sandalwood, and henbane. Fumes from burning henbane can cause convulsions and temporary insanity. If the spirit to be summoned or the operation to be performed is connected with one of the planets, as many as possible of the substances belonging to the planet should be used to produce the correct fumes and scents. The odors of Saturn are mostly sinister and evil-smelling. Asafoetida, civet, henbane, galbanum, musk, myrrh, mandrake, opium, scammony, sulfur, the powdered brains of a black cat. Civet and musk belong to Saturn as the planet of time because they are both used in perfumery to make long-lasting scents. Galbanum is a resin and was included in the sacred incense of Jehovah, the recipe for which is given in Exodus 30:34. Scammony is another resin and a purgative. For operations of Jupiter, the magician burns aloes wood, ash branches, cedar, ambergris, powdered lapis lazuli, saffron, storax, peacock's feathers, stork's blood, and the brain of a young stag. Aloes wood has a powerful and pleasing fragrance when burned. Napoleon was passionately fond of it. Ambergris, which is secreted in the intestines of sperm whales, also has a powerful and pleasant smell. The scent of Mars comes from benzoin, dragon's blood, human blood, euphorbium, hellebore root, powdered lodestone, pepper, sulfur, and tobacco. Most of these belong to Mars because they are hot, acrid, or red. Dragon's blood is a red exudation from certain varieties of palm tree and is now used for staining violins. Euphorbium is a sharp, acrid resin. The sun rules aloes wood, ambergris, cinnamon, cloves, frankincense, myrrh, musk, eagle's brain, and white cock's blood. Cinnamon and cloves belong to the sun as the preserver of life on earth because they are preservatives. It is now known that their oils have powerful bacteria-killing properties. Myrrh and frankincense are also preservatives. Myrrh was used by the ancient Egyptians in embalming corpses and was offered to Ra, the sun god, when in his zenith at midday. Venus rules ambergris, galbanum, coral, aloes wood, musk, benzoin, myrtle, rose, red sandalwood, storax, sparrow's brain, and pigeon's blood. Ambergris is probably included because of its connection with the sperm whale. The rose and the myrtle belong to Venus for their beauty and sweet scent, musk because it is aphrodisiac. A perfume made of ambergris, musk, and sandalwood was very popular with the beauties of Charles II's court. Coral is traditionally supposed to promote fertility. The scents of mercury come from mace, mastic, cinquefoil, cloves, narcissus, white sandalwood, storax, wormwood, and the brain of a fox. Mastic is a resin. Wormwood belongs to mercury because the alchemists connected wormwood with the bitter water of the process of solution, which was also mercurial water. In the 8th chapter of Revelation, a great star falls from heaven, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. The name of the star was Wormwood, and it made the waters bitter, and many men died of the bitter waters. The moon rules camphor, frankincense, menstrual blood, jasmine, ginseng, mandrake, onica, the dried heads of frogs, and the eyes of bulls. Ginseng is a stimulant plant whose root is used in China as a cure for mental or physical exhaustion. Onica was one of the ingredients of Jehovah's incense and was probably obtained from a species of Red Sea snail with a white transparent shell. The sea and the white color connect it with the moon. It is sometimes necessary to use fumes to keep evil spirits back. Sulfur, myrrh, red sandalwood, rotten apples, vinegar, wine galls, and arsenic mixed in the dregs of wine can be burned for this purpose. Fumes may go some way to explain the curious and unpleasant experience of three men named Weber, Gessner, and Zenner in a lonely hut in a vineyard near Jena in Germany on Christmas Eve, 1715. According to Weber, the only survivor, they went to the hut to summon up a spirit which would lead them to buried treasure. For protection, they had a rosary and various magic symbols, and they wrote tetragrammaton and pencil on the outside of the door before going into the hut. Inside, each said the Lord's Prayer three times. They drew a magic circle on the ceiling, an odd place for it, and lit a fire in a flower pot. The fumes were extremely thick. They opened the door to clear the atmosphere, then closed it again. Gessner began the conjuration to summon the spirit. He repeated an incantation 3 times, but no spirit appeared. Weber then chanted an incantation to Och, the ruling spirit of the sun in the Arbatel of magic. This incantation included the names of power, Tetragrammaton, Adonai, Agla, and Jehovah. He began to repeat it a 2nd time, but suddenly everything seemed to go dark before his eyes, and he fell unconscious. He last saw Gessner and Senna sitting at the table, apparently unaffected. The 3 were found next day. Gessner and Senna were dead, and Weber seemed near death. When he revived, Weber could not speak, but could only make strange, frightening noises. Watchmen were left to guard the hut overnight. It was bitterly cold, and the fire was lit again. The following morning, 1 watchman was dead, and the other 2 were unconscious. When they came round, both insisted they had been attacked by evil spirits during the night. The ghost of a small boy kept scratching at the door of the hut, finally opened it, and glided about inside. Weber eventually recovered, though he was physically and mentally shattered, suffering from nervous fears, pains in the back and stomach, vomiting, and an aversion to food. The obvious explanation, that fumes from the fire caused all the trouble, does not account for all the facts. Both Gessner and Senna had fouled themselves, which suggests a sudden severe shock rather than poisoning by fumes. In addition, Senna's body was covered with terrible weals and scratches, his tongue protruded from his mouth, and his neck and face were covered with burnt powder marks. The local officials investigated the incident soberly and meticulously, without recourse to torture. What may have happened, nobody can tell, but according to Professor Butler, a sane authority as well as a distinguished one, the published account rings convincingly true.